Yes, recording is on, Brian. Please proceed.
Wonderful. Thank you. Okay, welcome all. Accountability and Transparency Review Team 2, Conference Call 11 of Tuesday, September 10th. We have a proposed agenda up on the screen. Welcome to ICANN staff and review team members and others. Let's first go to adopt the proposed agenda. Sorry about that interference. First item is to adopt the proposed agenda. So we have the adoption of preliminary reports, update of statements of interest, and then the meat of today's discussion is to have interactions with ICANN staff on three issues: cross-community deliberation, community engagement, and recommendation number 15, implementation from ATRT 1, followed by an update on templates and issue owners' progress. Any other business? Are there any changes? Larissa.
Good morning, everybody. Hi, Brian. I wanted to add to any other business a quick clarification regarding the independent expert composite scoring sheet.
Ah, sure. So let's make sure we bring that up in item number 6.
Great. Thank you.
Certainly. Any other edits or changes to the agenda? Any objections? Seeing no hands, we will move to adopt the agenda and move to item number 2, the adoption of preliminary reports. Two calls. There's conference call 10, preliminary report. I've gone through the report myself. I hope others have on the line. Are there any corrections or suggested edits to preliminary report for conference call number 10. Looking for hands. Welcome, Alan. Seeing no hands, we will adopt that preliminary report for conference call number 10. Can we see the preliminary report for the call with the ASO members? Thank you. So we had a conference call on September 4th with members of the ASO. Here is the preliminary report from that call. Are there any corrections or edits to the preliminary report? Looking for hands. Okay, seeing none, we will adopt that report and ask ICANN staff to please post that to our wiki as soon as possible, both of them. Thank you very much. So let's move to item number 3, which is for the ATRT 2 members who are on the call. This is a call for an update to your statements of interest. Under our conflicts of interest policy, we've all filed statements of interest as part of this process. Does any ATRT 2 member have an update or modification to their statement of interest to make? Looking for hands. Seeing none, no updates to be made at this time by the members on this call. Let's move to agenda item 4, discussion with ICANN staff. So we have three areas to discuss with ICANN staff. The first is cross-community deliberation process. Larissa, is there someone from staff who wanted to kick off the discussion or lead the discussion? Or who is here to participate with us on the discussion?
Hi, Brian?
Yes.
David Olive here. I will be happy to lead the discussion. And we have, in addition to myself, Bart Boswinkel, our senior director who handles CCNSO support, and Marika Konings, who handles senior policy director as well, handling GNSO matters, will also be here to be part of the discussion. Let me again thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the ATRT review group for looking at the cross-community deliberation process. ICANN, as you know, over time has used cross-community working groups as a successful mechanism to organize activities across two or more of our ICANN supporting organizations or advisory committees. And there have been examples of successful cooperation, particularly in the IDN area, which resulted, of course, in the IDN CCTLD fast track, and also work in the DNS Security and Stability Analysis Working Group. The thing to note, of course, and why I think you're looking at this topic is some community working groups were less successful in leading to good advice or recommendations that could be then folded into ongoing policy discussions. And in fact, some would argue that there was some confusion and misunderstanding across the different supporting organizations and advisory councils as to what the role is. We know, of course, that cross-committee working groups are attracting more and more attention. Some in the community are advocating greater use of them, but others are saying, well, wait a minute, there are concerns about the principles and the processes of which they're operating on. So to that extent, I think it's a good focus for your group. I know in our terms for the policy development staff, we're looking at other ways or other mechanisms that can get the community working together to present ideas and suggestions as another vehicle, if you will, to the existing structures. But again, these are areas that we're trying to look more closely at, and we're glad that you're doing that as well. Of course, you know, the cross-committee working groups shouldn't be mistaken for a new way of developing consensus policy or overtake existing roles of our SOs and our ACs, but they could provide, as I say, an additional mechanism to foster a cross-community dialogue in understanding the topics and how best to frame issues or potential solutions or proposed policies. And so to that extent, we've been encouraging our GNSO and CCNSO, among others, that they've been working together on a set of principles to which they could be formed guidelines or process relating to such groups that could be agreed upon going forward, and also to extend this to other SOs and ACs. I think to that extent, you know, if the working group here were to look at both the board-initiated and community-initiated cross-community working groups and talk to maybe the participants in some of them or the leaders or the chairs of some of them and even maybe the staff, to ask them how that worked, what criteria might have worked, and in the successful ones, those that were kind of linked to ongoing solutions in the policy development process, that could be one area. It wasn't necessarily always board-directed, though the one board-directed one was the geographic region. Some of them were also coming from the SOs themselves. So I think I would just kind of stop here and ask if my colleagues, Bart and Marika, would like to comment from their perspective working with these two policy development SOs, the CCNSO and the GNSO. If, Mr. Chairman, you would want me to do that, I would like to have them make some comments as well.
Thanks, David. And please, Brian suffices. What I would like to do is kind of put a little bit of a frame around the discussion, too, if you're okay with that, and if we can come back to it. And I'm very happy that Bart and Marika are here in their respective capacities. But I just want to put, and I know that you're very well versed in this, this, David, but I want to frame the discussion this way.
Yes.
We are chartered to assess implementation, make recommendations under 9.1 of the AOC, and 9.1E, as we all know, requires us to assess the policy development process to facilitate enhanced cross-community deliberations. Actually, ICANN, to assess the policy development process to facilitate enhanced cross-community deliberations and effective and timely policy development. The NE, and then this is a discussion thread that we've been having throughout our work, as you know, David, that's a lowercase policy development process, PDP, so the broader policy development process as opposed to the uppercase PDP that in our jargon we're using specifically with respect to the GNSO PDP process. So this is the frame of the work and the discussion, and across the deliberations of ATRT2, you have a number of threads. We have a thread of discussion about the GAC and the GAC and how it may be able to participate in some cross-community function with respect to the GNSO uppercase PDP and maybe even with respect to the lowercase PDP across the broader community. We have the independent experts work that is chartered to provide us an analysis of the GNSO PDP process. And very welcome to hear Bart from Bart in the CCNSO perspective, and also had a very good call with the ASO on their policy development process. So all I want to do now is call out the active threads of discussion that are informing the ATRT2's work and point us all back to the language of 9.1E as really the frame around this discussion. And sorry that took me so long, but if you don't mind, everyone, please proceed.
No, I appreciate that clarification and explanation, Brian. Thank you. If I may, in terms of turning to first Marika for the GNSO work in that area, and then Bart, I think that may help in the discussion. Marika, would you please?
So this is Marika. So thank you all for inviting me to join this call. Just to share a little bit from a GNSO perspective, first of all, maybe to mention, and as Brian also alluded to, early engagement in capital P policy development. I think some of the information I have already shared with you on how that's currently possible under the PDP and as well the work that's ongoing, for example, with the GAC to try to identify how we can engage them at an earlier stage. But looking specifically at the topic of cross-community deliberations and engagement, it may be worth mentioning that it is an area where the GNSO has been looking at as well. As David mentioned, there have been some more successful or less successful efforts that have taken place in the past. And I think as a result of those, one of those less successful processes, the GNSO actually decided that it would have been helpful to actually look at, first of all, from the GNSO perspective, what they would expect from a cross-community process and what kind of framework they would view from their perspective as a way of moving things forward. With the idea in mind that once they within the GNSO would have a kind of agreement, what they would think would be the principles of such collaboration, they could actually reach out to other groups to ask whether that kind of framework would also meet with their expectations and hopefully come to some kind of common understanding. So they developed a first set of principles already a while back, which was then also circulated to all the different SOs and ACs for their input. And as a result of that, they actually received some feedback from the CCNSO Council or the CCNSO community and have engaged with the CCNSO in conversations on that. And now they're actually in the next step of the process of reforming the group that initially developed those principles to actually take what the CCNSO provided and see how that can be incorporated and hopefully come with a next draft that then again will be circulated with all the different SOs and ACs, hopefully as a kind of iterative process whereby at the end of the day, hopefully there will be a kind of framework whereby if there is a decision at any point in time that there would be a need for cross-community deliberations or engagement, at least there is a framework in place so everyone knows what to expect and how such groups are expected to operate. So just to give you a bit of a status update from the perspective of the GNSO and the active work that's currently ongoing in relation to that topic.
Thank you, Marika. This is Brian. If I could ask you to provide some thoughts, and you can come back later on the call too. again, referring back to the AOC, and the key, one of the key words there is to facilitate cross-community deliberations. From your perspective and your experience, and you can focus on GNSO or more broadly, what are the things that ICANN does and or could do with respect to facilitation of that? Because, you know, clearly we're working in a bottom-up multi-stakeholder model, and you know, ideally one wants to see cross-community deliberation occurring from that perspective. But what, as an ICANN staffer, have you been able to do, or do you think ICANN could do, to effectively facilitate the further development of these types of deliberations?
Would you like me to already provide some initial thoughts on that, or shall I wait until
after? Certainly.
No, I think from my perspective, I think indeed having a clear framework and a clear indication on which topics or which kind of areas are suitable for cross-community engagement, I think that would help us in supporting those groups. And again, also looking at, for example, chartering processes or the procedures that would apply, I think, again, help set the expectations for those that participated in it, but also from staff supporting those groups so we can clearly direct questions or the operations of such groups according to what is set out in the clear framework or set of principles. I think, as you know, the GNSO working groups, for example, operate under GNSO working group guidelines in which it's clearly set out how, you know, decisions are expected to be taken, what the different roles in a working group are. And I think that is currently lacking for, as a broader framework for cross-community engagement, which sometimes makes it more difficult to support those kind of groups, also to manage expectations from different participants, because they may have different experiences or expectations based on how, you know, either policy development or working groups are run within their respective SOs, ACs. So I think any kind of overall framework and common understanding of what the objective and how such groups are expected to function, I think, would both facilitate staff work, but also community members engage in such efforts.
Thanks very much. David or Bart, whoever would like to pick it up from there, by all means.
Could we have Bart?
I just wanted to say I joined.
Welcome. Thank you.
Bart, would you care to make some comments, and then I can comment as well.
Yes, this is Bart, and thank you for allowing me to participate. As Marika said, the CCNSO submitted some comments on the principles that the GNSO was developing for cross-community working groups. And these comments were based on the, I would say, positive experiences the CCNSO had with several cross-community working groups. And I think, as David alluded to, say probably the most successful one was the IDNC working group, which was also board initiated, that led to the creation of the IDNC CTLD's fast track methodology. And I'm on purpose using the word methodology to avoid any confusion with regard to policy, because it wasn't a policy with a capital P. It was definitely a policy with a small P. Now, looking at these different cross-community working groups in which the CCNSO participated, I think there are two very critical elements and which were not captured in the principles, and that really drives, I think, also the say from my where I sit, the participation of the GAC is first of all that the participating SOs and ACs need to know and need to be at least adopt the charter of a working group. That's a critical decision. Even say, going back to what I said, the board, because it was the board-initiated IDNC working group, before the board took that decision, both the GAC and the CCNSO knew and published their acknowledgement of the charter. And the reason why I'm saying this and why I'm stressing this is, in fact, such a charter, and no matter about the functioning of the group, but at least it clearly states up front the rules of engagement during the process. So that's for the SOs and ACs, participating SOs and ACs, and from the working group members. So that's one critical element, what I've seen. The second one, and I think, and again, that was based on the experience, that the SOs and ACs who do participate need, at the end, the ability to vote or express their support, or even if they do not support, be able to disengage from the result from such a cross-community working group before you take the next step. And if one of the participating SOs and ACs does not support the end result, then there needs to be a kind of mechanism that it will not be represented as a true cross-community working group. So that's in addition to what, say, Marika said, what I view from my experience as the two most critical points why some of these SOs and ACs were successful.
Bart, this is Brian. Could you just come back to a point you just hit, and it was something about whether the cross-community working group produced a result or not, and how that influenced the view of its success or not. I missed the point. Could you just reiterate what you said?
Let me make it very concrete.
Thank you.
At the time, the IDNC working group, because I think everybody has a bit of has that history in mind, the IDNC working group at its Paris meeting, both the CCNSO and the GAC needed to endorse the results, so the final report, so the recommended methodology, only if both the GAC and the CCNSO and even the GNSO and at large, if they would have objected, it wouldn't be sent to the board as a recommended methodology for the IDN fast track. Does it answer your question? Because that is a critical point.
I believe so. So conceptually, the two groups coming together in a structured process that produces recommendations, but the recommendations need to go back to the respective entities so that it can be ratified or supported in some way through their own processes.
Yeah, and I can frame it in another way to make it clear. Say the first decision around the say adoption is what I said. It is agreeing on rules of engagement. Is that you and that you discuss stuff through that agreed upon process, but that doesn't mean that at the end you agree upon the result. And whoever participates need to have the ability to, for whatever reasons, and because they have a broader community like the GAC, so you may have GAC members participating, but that doesn't mean that they represent the GAC, because that's one of the issues, is that the GAC as a whole has the ability to retract from the end result. And that's a very important step. Otherwise, people commit up front to an outcome which they don't know.
Understood. Thank you. Alan, I see your hand is up. Please.
Thank you. I guess I want to go back a little bit and express why this topic has come up in the ATRT, you know, other than the fact that it was one of this, you know, cross-community work is one of the things listed in the AOC. The first is the continual use of the term silo within ICANN, and the belief that groups are doing things unilaterally when there might be some value in working together. So that's a pervasive thing that comes up time and time again within ICANN. Two specific cases. David listed the DSSA as one of the success stories. And in terms of a bottom-up formation of the group, and for those of you who don't remember, it was formed essentially as a result of ICANN's decision to create a CERT of its own, computer emergency response team. And that group has been successful in its operation. On the other hand, the group is in abeyance right now because ICANN, in looking at security and stability issues, and David Conrad can go into this in far more detail than I can, essentially ignored what they were doing and did something completely different. And my take on that is, if it's not started, you know, by staff or by the board, then this group may just as well, you know, the work may as well not be done, even if it has a nominally successful process going on. And the last is the current discussion on policy and implementation, which many people in the community felt should have been something that the board would have wanted to charter a cross-community group on and chose not to. And that, again, puts into question, are we likely to have effective use of cross-community groups? So we have the various things saying we should be doing it. The AOC says it. The concern about silos say it. But then there are messages that are coming out that says don't bother. And I guess it's this discontinuity that is of real concern, at least to some of us. Thank you.
Brian David Olive, may I respond?
Absolutely.
Or not respond, just comment. Alan, thank you very much. You know, you're right, the somewhat genesis, and we hear it as well, about the silos and unilateral action. Though I must say, going back to the original affirmation of commitment, you know, at least from our point of view as policy staff, we try to make sure that there is notification of what's happening in terms of policy development process, capital P within the GNSO, other activities within the CCNSO, and to alert people to what the ASO will be doing for global policies. And we make every effort to inform people using communications that we have in terms of emails, in terms of now my ICANN notifications, and saying that you're welcome to attend, you're welcome to come on board and input on that. So we do that, and we realize that greater efforts have to be made on that to reach out across the communities, across the SOs and ACs, to ensure that they're, one, welcome to engage, encouraged to engage, and have a chance, if they cannot participate fully, to comment in the public comment process or whatever as the process goes forward. The other element, of course, is that there are both community and staff resources at issue here. To say that there's a working group within the GNSO or within the CCNSO, that requires staff volunteers of experts and people interested. That also requires staff support to support those works. And to that extent, when we also hear about community burnout or community fatigue, or the being overwhelmed in essence by some of the matters, I think we have to be also careful to say what will the cross-community working group actually do, because it is drawing resources from the community volunteers and resources from staff to support the activities or the suggestions or the proposals that they are trying to make. So even in the case of the DSSA, as Alan mentioned, it was a bottoms-up. We had staff support from policy and security to help guide them. And I think, some of their recommendations or suggestions were channeled in a different direction, to the staff or to security staff. In essence, it had a useful and helpful event effect of engaging those experts from the community and focusing attention on their views. So I think one has to be careful that it is not a cure-all for everything. We have to be attentive to when we call for community involvement to make sure that it's measured and appropriate and appropriately staffed by both community and staff members. And so I would just kind of comment that way, that we do every effort to get the word out on what's going on. That includes GAC and early policy information. We see the ALAC in particular, year after year, adding more policy statements than they had before in the previous year, and refining their mechanisms for commenting on and inputting into processes. So those I would like to kind of highlight as efforts to get that cross-community involvement and to break down the silos that are really structural parts of ICANN.
Thanks, David. I've got Fiona Alexander's hand up.
Brian, it's Alan. Could I comment on two of David's statements first?
Sure.
Yeah. David, what you say is true, but, and there's often a but, being informed about what's going on in other groups and encouraging participation, which works very well, certainly in several of the directions, is not the same as across community work, because as Bart clearly said, the joint chartering where both groups bless what it is, what the contended outcomes are, and both groups or all the groups bless or have an opportunity to bless the outcomes of the group makes a difference. So yes, an ALAC person or an at-large person working on a GNSO working group, you know, has the opportunity to speak, but when it comes down to it, the GNSO is the group that makes the decision on exactly what the charter is, perhaps with input from other participants, and decides on what on whether to recommend to the board the outcome. And that's a substantive difference in the two. And on the DSSA, yes, there was good support. And you're telling a story that it was successful. The participants in the group are rather upset right now and don't quite know where to go as the next step. So there's, again, a discontinuity in how this is viewed, and when it's viewed by the participants as something which they may have wasted their time on, that doesn't bode well in the future. Thank you.
Brian, may I respond?
Yes, please, and then Fiona Alexander.
Let me explain. I'm one of the policy, I'm the policy person who is supporting together with Julie Hetland the DSSA. Say, going back, the DSSA is a bit of a complex story. They have been in hibernation for over a year now, awaiting the results of a board committee. Up till that point, they move forward, and so it's and they have a way forward now, and they will present it to the participating SOs and ACs by the Buenos Aires meeting. Again, alluding to the point I just said around, they report back to the SOs and ACs, and I think, say, I may agree with you on the substantive point of view, but from a process procedural point of view, it is and it has been a very successful joint cross-community working group. And I think because at the starting end is you have the SOs and AC participating. And say going back, and that has to do, and unfortunately, and this is where it becomes complicated, it has to do with the topic itself as well, which is really cross-community. So if you look at, say, some of the communication going on around the principles the GNSO is developing, say, one has to really understand when something is a cross-community topic and when you want both SO or want at least two SOs and ACs participating in developing a topic. Because there are other ways, and with the GNSO is a very good example where it happens, but it happens in the CCNSO as well, where the, say, members or participants or observers from other SOs and ACs are invited to participate in the work in order to see whether there is at least have an understanding what goes on in other areas. And I think a very good example from, say, what I mean there is that the GNSO, say, some of their working groups is looking at CCTLDs because some of the CCTLDs have dealt with issues the GTLD registries and registrars are dealing with right now, and they want to learn on from their experience. But it is typically a GNSO topic issue, but, say, where CCTLDs could provide expertise without turning this into a true cross-community working group. So in discussing the cross-community working groups, one needs to take a very close look what one really means with a cross-community working group.
Thanks, Bart. Fiona, Alexander.
Yeah, hi. Thanks, Brian. So this is Fiona. I just had a couple of questions, and perhaps they might be a little bit controversial, but I was just curious what you all thought was the actual essence of the ICANN multi-stakeholder model. Because, I mean, it seems to me, and I mean, I think we'll take the blame for some of this here at NTIA with some of the wording and how things have shifted, but anytime someone doesn't like the outcome of a process, they say the multi-stakeholder model doesn't work because it doesn't include them. So this gets back to this: are the silos a problem? Is the process broken? Is the structure broken? And that's sort of what I was asking, is what does this multi-stakeholder model mean to you all when you look at things? Is it just the GNSO, or do you consider the multi-stakeholder model to be all the different parts of the community? And do these subdivisions or divisions within the community help or hinder or have no impact on the ability to actually do this? The reason I ask is because sort of the foundational documents for ICANN predate the concept of or the term multi-stakeholder. It was really industry self-regulation at the time, and the world's moved and morphed to multi-stakeholder, and I kind of wonder if the ICANN structure hasn't morphed accordingly yet.
I think that was directed at me, Fiona. David Olive here. I'm happy to start the discussion.
I'd open it up to actually anyone that wants to answer it. So.
I know. I understand. But I think I'll start. In terms of the essence of the multi-stakeholder model, in terms of the policy development staff, you know, I think we're always, well, first, we see it as a division of labor. The current ICANN structure does in that sense divide the labor between supporting organizations who develop policy recommendations for the board, the GNSO, CCNSO, and ASO, and the advisory councils that provide input and advice on that to the board as well as to the other members of the community and community groups. So to that extent, you know, we're always sensitive to and try to promote and worry about, if you will, that there is information, awareness, openness, welcomingness, if you will, for others to come in and do this input and be involved with that. And even to the point where we do document that in a checklist to the board before they make decisions as to who was consulted and how they were consulted. And surely, you know, the structures over time can change and maybe should change, and we also should look to new tools to help us further engage the stakeholders in this process. But in our view, it should be, you know, involve as many in the community as want to be involved and should be involved. I'll stop there.
Thanks, David. Anybody else on ICANN staff or on the review team?
Yeah, this is Marika. Maybe just to add what David said, because I think basically David in broad lines already said what I was going to add. But for example, from GNSO perspective, looking at the PDP, I think indeed there the principles as well, as much input as we can get to make sure all views are heard and respected. That goes, you know, beyond the GNSO. GNSO working groups are open to anyone interested to participate. So we reach out to all the SOs and ACs to either participate in working groups or send input early at an early stage of the process, so that can factor in. There are several various steps in the process whereby, again, active outreach is done to the different groups to, you know, inform them of where the working group has gotten, what are the draft recommendations, and again, asking input, you know, either through public comment or through engagement, through face-to-face meetings. So I think there are a broad range of opportunities where it's taken into account that, of course, you know, policy development cannot be done in a vacuum and shouldn't be only the GNSO Council as such looking at those issues, but there's an active need to engage the broader community. And although there are, of course, areas where, you know, we can improve and are looking concretely at improving such outreach, for example, in working with the GAC, making sure that we have a method or a mechanism that suits, you know, their working principles and how they operate to be able to provide such input, I think shows that everyone recognizes that it's an important part to make sure that everyone feels that they can participate and can be heard, and also when input is provided, that there is a commitment to review that and provide responses or at least indicate, you know, why certain information wasn't incorporated in any final recommendations or conclusions.
Fiona, is your hand up anew or still?
Yes. So
yeah,
maybe to put a finer point on it then. So I think the review team in meeting with different stakeholder groups over the last 7 or 8 months has gotten obviously a variety of feedback from different stakeholders. And maybe to overgeneralize or oversimplify just for the sake of this argument, I think it's fair to say that some of the GNSO members suggest that if it's not a GNSO process, it's not multi-stakeholder. So I guess the question I have for the staff is, how do you all interpret that? Do you see the GNSO as the source of multi-stakeholder policy development in ICANN exclusively, or is it, you know, a process that's beyond that?
This is Marika. I think the GNSO sees itself as a leading body when it comes to GTLD policy development. I don't think they have any view specifically on that a multi-stakeholder process should be GNSO-led. I don't think that's at all, or at least that has never come across to me. I think where they do see that they have the responsibility to take a lead when it comes to GTLD-related responsibility or policy development, as also is outlined in the ICANN bylaws. I don't think there's a perception that multi-stakeholder equates GNSO processes or led processes.
And this is Bart.
Bart, please.
I can only support what Marika is saying and make it even add to it. Say, I think the there is one complicating factor in if you look at the scope of self-regulation, starting from that and from your question, Fiona. The scope of self-regulation is different per SO. So that's the starting point. And I think most CCTLDs would be very annoyed if the GNSO would claim that they are the sole source of self-regulation. They view themselves as, first of all, themselves as a source, a local source of self-regulation, and ICANN and through the CCNSO as a means of self-regulation at global level. And the way to do it is through the multi-stakeholder model of multi-stakeholder processes. That's why they're reaching out to other SOs and ACs to engage them as much as possible.
Thanks, Bart. Anyone else from ICANN staff or the review team on that question? Alan.
Yeah, I guess I'm a little bit confused. In my mind, the concept of multi-stakeholder, rather the components of multi-stakeholder vary based on the subject. So the stakeholders who have an active interest in CCTLD issues are different from those who have an active interest in GTLD issues, and from those who have an active interest in addressing issues. So it's, you know, I don't think we can claim there is any definitive group of multi-stakeholders that must participate and want to participate in any given subject. It's a dynamic combination depending on what the discussion is. So I think we have to take that in mind when we talk about multi-stakeholder. It's not a fixed group voting on everything, regardless of what their interest is on it. And I think that's reflected in the kind of things Marika and Bart said.
So this is Fiona again, just to sort of put a little bit of another finer point on it. I think it's very clear to say that with respect to the G space, the GNSO has this clear interest and role, and the CCs, same thing with the CCNSO and the ASO for addressing. What I'm trying to get at is, so where are the other stakeholders? Where does the ALAC fit in? Where does the GAC fit in? Who would have interest across all three in some cases and maybe not? That's kind of what I was trying to get at, just to provide some context.
Alan.
I can answer that certainly from the perspective of ALAC. We believe and have believed for a long time that users should have a real seat at the table in the GNSO. Maybe the CCNSO also, although, based on operational issues, there seems to be less need for it there. So from that perspective, we certainly agree with you that the ALAC has a wider responsibility than that just the GTLD space. We, among other things, feel we are obliged to give opinions on ICANN itself, not necessarily just the technology area of what we do, but there is some indication, however, that we believe that we should be part of the multi-stakeholder model with respect to, for instance, GTLDs, not restricted to, but for instance. So from that perspective, I think you've identified an issue that ICANN in the past essentially has said there must be a orthogonality between ACs and SOs, and you can't have any overlap. And that, I believe, is something that needs to be changed as we have moved from self-regulation to multi-stakeholder.
Any other comments, contributions, questions?
Brian David Oliver, if I may.
Yes, David, please.
I think I just want to also state that, we have to deal with the structures we have and do our best to make them work most efficiently and effectively. But that doesn't say that those structures are set in concrete. To Fiona's point about the transition and the evolution of the SO and AC structures, if you will, are, I think, inevitable to change. And as we go forward, especially with the new GTLD program and the like, how that will and how best to do that is, of course, things we're looking at from the strategic panel, from your group, and other reviews. Advise us, inform us, and in a sense provide a guidance or a path for the community as it looks to how best to change, if it needs to change, and where to change. So we look forward to your reports and others that are looking at it in a strategic panel way to help the discussion.
Thanks, David, very much. I see Fiona, and then I'm just going to do a time check and make sure that we get to the other two items with Chris Gift. So Fiona, please.
Yeah, and thanks. I didn't mean to put anybody on the spot, and I think it was just sort of as we're sort of talking through this in an academic sense and then based on the history of it. But to that end, the current structure of ICANN and the different supporting organizations and ACs is not what it was originally, and it has changed over the course of its 15-year life cycle, and I think people tend to forget that. But David, do you guys have anything that sort of just at a high level traces the history of the groups and why or what happened and when happened or even a timeline? I mean, my recollection is there didn't used to be a GNSO and a CCNSO. It was just a DSO or something like that. Is there anything that you guys have on hand as staff that sort of provides that structural adjustment history or timeline or map or something?
Say I've seen that in the history of ICANN document. Fiona, you raise a good point. It's really people reminding us of what it was and those community members who were involved. But, of course, you know, Diane Schroeder is also, among other things that she's doing for ICANN, is serving as an archivist in a new position, which we're trying to kind of document a lot of this, at this stage, maybe oral history. But we don't really have a what I would call the definitive history of the various structures within ICANN.
Okay, thanks, David. One last shot at this before we move on to items 2 and 3 on the agenda. Any last comments before we move on? Okay, thanks. Very, very interesting and helpful conversation. Moving on to, we have community engagement, ICANN Labs and other updates, and the third bullet, which we'll want to get to, is ATRT1 recommendation number 15, the implementation of stratified prioritized public notice and comment. Chris, are you the bullet number 2 guy, or are you both of them?
I am certainly bullet number 2, and I think I can certainly start the discussion for bullet number 3, and then perhaps others join in as well.
Okay, terrific. The floor is yours. Take it away.
Thank you very much, Brian, and thank you very much for the rest of ATRT2 team for inviting me. An update on ICANN Labs. But before I provide a status of where we are at now, I just would like to take 2 minutes to take a step back and to remind everybody, for those who perhaps weren't in Durban and haven't been following the initiative, why we started this. So ICANN Labs is a means to an end. It is not the end in of itself. And it starts with an outreach group, the outreach community group, which has been meeting for some time now, a couple of years, if I recall, and also other discussions around ICANN community, around how do we enable a greater breadth and diversity of participation for people who can only participate via digital means, because they can't attend meetings or they can't participate for various reasons, whether it's personal or professional. And there's been some discussion, or was certainly in Beijing, requests from that same group to look at the relevancy of the content on ICANN.org and how do we make that more accessible? So not only more relevant, but more accessible to community across the globe. So at staff, we were looking at that, and we thought, well, okay, if we start down that path of adding engagement tools or mechanisms or applications, if you want to call them, on ICANN.org, and we start looking at how do we make the content more accessible and more relevant to people, it clearly led to the belief that we would have to redo ICANN.org. It would lead to a new type of website, which would have not only just the publication of content, which is its primary role right now, and education of people with publication of content, but to something that would work in parallel with that would be engagement of some type, funnels where people could see active means of participating in any of the conversations that are going on at ICANN, and then eventually, if they felt like it or felt it was appropriate for them, you know, leading to participating in an SO or AC, depending on what kind of stakeholder they were or where they felt they could participate most effectively. So that, in our mind, was the end goal, was a new ICANN.org that had these capabilities. But we started to think about this, and we started to think about applications and how we build them or how do we purchase them and test them. Was exactly that, was how do we test them? We didn't want to, buy services or initiate that and just sort of foist them on the community. Obviously, you know, that's not in the values of how ICANN works with the bottom-up process. So we started to think about it, and how do we, you know, how do we communicate what we are trying to do in terms of engagement? Along those same lines, we thought that, you know, the best way of discussing this was not to share documents back and forth, but to actually test ideas online and to see, you know, would people use different mechanisms for finding, you know, for finding each other, for engaging in conversations. So given some of these ideas, we thought, well, again, we needed a place where this could happen. It couldn't happen on ICANN.org, on our primary website, because we thought it would cause too much confusion and consternation. People would be unsure, were these tests real, were they not, and so on. So we created ICANN Labs. And this is a place where we are prototyping ideas, where we are stating a hypothesis. Well, first off, where we had performed research, or we were doing research, and we would state our hypothesis, the outcome of that research, with the potential, so the hypothesis would state the problem and state a potential solution, and then we would build a prototype. And by prototype, I mean literally just a series of HTML screens with really nothing in the background. You know, it's a whole Wizard of Oz effect where, you know, we would be staff or consultants would be in the background linking people together if that was necessary or doing other staff or other activities manually. But the process would look automated and it would allow people to test the idea effectively online in something, some sort of form that would be closer to what it would be in production and to tell us if it works and if it worked for them and if it worked for the community. And if it didn't work, that was okay. Then we could kill the idea early enough when we hadn't invested too much money or too much effort into it and then try something else to solve some of those problems. So that ICANN Labs is a discussion, so it's a brief overview of how we got to ICANN Labs and what its goal is and what it's trying to do. Since then, since we started the initiative, we've gotten we've done our best in terms of outreach. You know, we spoke to the SO and AC chairs at Durban. We also gave an overview to the ALAC group. We gave an overview to the GNSO. I think we also spoke to quite a few, over 50 individuals in terms of one-on-one interviews at Durban, well, prior to Durban, during Durban, and also post-Durban. And as of right now, we actually have 525 people have signed up to ICANN Labs to participate in some way, whether that is receiving updates from us as we continue to blog on how we're advancing and what people are commenting and what the comments are on the testing. And we have approximately 57 members, well, not approximately, sorry, exactly 57 members, who have volunteered their time to participate more fully. So they are either, they're in one of the tracks, and we have four tracks, and I'll talk about those in just a minute. So they are participating in four of those tracks in some way, volunteering their time. And lastly, we've also created an advisory group to help us continue to guide, so it's yet another mechanism for people to participate in this project. And currently the advisory group has 28 people. The way we staff the advisory group is really just a call for volunteers. We had sent out an email to the SO and AC chairs, which was an open invite, and we asked them to just circulate it to their groups through the mail listservs that they have. We also posted the invitation on the GNSO website. We posted it there. And then, again, we had discussions with each of the SO and AC chairs, follow-up discussions with them to make sure that we miss anybody, did in fact the emails go out to the listservs and so on. So out of that outreach, we ended up having 28 people. And I must note that in the initial email soliciting volunteers, we had initially limited to 20, and that was just a manageability issue. We just felt more than 20 people would make it difficult for people to participate effectively and for staff to manage. But the people who volunteered, when we got up to like 22 very rapidly, we polled them and they wanted to have more people, more voices in their group. So we basically just opened it up. And right now we have 28. I know there are, I think, three or four others that are seeking to join, so they will participate and the numbers are going to grow from there. So the advisory group is growing very large. We also have a public webinar in early September where we describe the projects, the same discussion, the goals, where we were trying to go, the methodologies we were adopting. And again, we had a public call for people to volunteer and to participate and to join us on that Ken Lab. We have the work itself. We have four streams or four tracks that are ongoing, and we have four tests that are going on right now. We have something, and they're each solving a particular problem. The four tracks, and each of these tracks have a persona. So we did quite a bit of research, then we wrote up what the problem statement is that we were trying to solve, who this would work for. So we have those personas are up on ICANN Labs, and people have commented on them. And then we have these four tracks. The first track is around advisors. We, after many, many discussions with newcomers, and again, sorry if I may take one more step back, and that is Labs and this initiative is very, very focused on newcomers. Right? It is not focused on supporting working group activity or anything like that. So it's an engagement on the outer circle of people who participate in ICANN, who are curious about ICANN, want to learn more, and want to engage with the multi-stakeholder process. So that's where we're focused, this initiative is focused. Anyway, so after many interviews with newcomers or people who were embedded in ICANN, who were veterans but remember their newcomer days, it was clear that there was a pattern to those who were successful. So we talked to some newcomers who hadn't been successful as of yet, you know, who may have been participating for a year and really hadn't gotten anywhere, to those that had been participating for a year and were already members of a working group or two. And we were curious what we had noticed and learned. The distinction between them, or one distinction that we noticed, was ones who were successful, or more successful, and if you want to call it that in terms of diving deep into ICANN, if you want to call that success, is they had advisors or mentors. They had people who could help them identify who they should talk to, which working groups were working on what, and where the work was happening, and to help them navigate the community. And so that was very interesting to us, and of course we had many, we were trying to understand, well, how do we scale this, you know, so it can work globally, how do we do this digitally, since we are very focused on digital tools. And we came up with several ideas, and which one of them we're testing now, where we have this very somewhat of a lightweight advisor concept where people can, you know, sign up to be an advisee and say, hey, I need help, and to post, be able to post a few questions that they need help around in terms of navigation, and then advisors can volunteer their time and answer a few questions here and there when it's appropriate. And they could get access to the person's profile to understand really what they're looking for and a few other things like that. So it's an idea that people are interested in. We do have some traction there. Right now we have six volunteers on each side. We have six advisor volunteers and six advisee volunteers. And so I know it's being tested right now. So advisees are posing questions digitally, and then we're displaying the questions, and then advisors are then posting responses. We're also testing mechanisms of evaluating the responses and voting on them and other things like that to see about that. And we're also supporting translation around those comments or better understanding of how we can support multilingual advice. That's one track. There's another track around streams of content. So this is, again, an issue of relevancy. There's been quite a bit of discussion and problems around, you know, for newcomers is to make information relevant. Content on ICANN, within ICANN, can be very dense and rich, and it's not always, that's not necessarily very intuitive content, and so how do they make it relevant to me, my geography, my company, my country? So we're working off the My ICANN concept where somebody could curate a stream of information content coming out of ICANN, and people could request a translation. And by that, we don't mean a translation into a native another language, but a translation into either plain English or plain French, plain Arabic, whatever it is that they require. But really translating the concepts of what the content is about. So whether it's a policy document, a new contract, RAA, or something like that. And again, people are volunteering on both sides. People are volunteering to perform this translation to say, yeah, you know, I will curate a stream. And it's who's curating it is very visible. Here this individual, here's part of this SLAC, here's their viewpoints, and here's why they're curating this stream, and here's how they're translating into plain English this content. So again, that's another experiment we're running. We are also running an experiment around profiles. Here the concept is that we really want, again, another issue was that newcomers had faced was, you know, they found it difficult to find out who to talk to at ICANN, especially if they did not attend meetings, right? They found it very difficult to discover new people, or they had questions, or to better understand who they should be talking to within the community. And so we thought a great deal about that and thought about, well, you know, the community itself could also benefit from understanding who is participating, not only who the individuals are, but how they're participating. And this goes to expertise location as we try to staff working groups or other committees. As these efforts grow, you know, there is that question that was broached earlier about, you know, too many working groups in terms of, and then fatigue on part of the community. And so we really want to, as newcomers come on board, we really want a mechanism for working group committee leads or the SOACs to be able to find people either within their stakeholder groups to participate and staff these groups. So the combination of the two to this concept of a profile, you know, where somebody would understand what the community they belong to, who they were, their interests for this individual, and how they have participated in ICANN in the past. And by that I mean, you know, what working groups they participated in, what comments have they made, and so on and so forth. And again, still very much an idea that we're testing out and we're looking at. So far, the validation on that has been successful. We have asked people to volunteer to have their profiles created, because we're going to create the profiles to start, again, to test the idea. We started off with 6. You know, we got people to volunteer for 6. And then we put a call out for more people, and so far I think 42 people have volunteered to have their profiles created or want their profiles created. So that's I'm very pleased about that, and I do think that'll be something successful in the end. The last one, very quickly, is a roundtable, and this one was the initial idea was to support more fully the public comment process. In the sense that, you know, when we talk to newcomers, again, it was a question of relevancy around public comment, and they didn't know how to comment on any particular, you know, issue that was put up. I mean, they could read the document, but again, they weren't necessarily sure how it was relevant to them or how they should participate in the process. So rather than, you know, so what we looked at was, could there be a means of, associated to a public comment, could there be a roundtable discussion of key stakeholders or experts on the issue that would have a visible roundtable discussion around that topic to solicit the various points of views around this document, and then have that visible next to the public comment or next to the document under public comment. I'll be frank, this one is not very successful. We're not getting much traction around the idea. There's a lot of discussion around, you know, how the mechanics of it, is that in effect a public comment when people do this? Does it infringe on the public comment process? There are many, many questions and issues on this concept, on this test. And so right now, we're effectively, I think we're on talk to the advisory group tomorrow, but you know, our initial idea is that this one is probably not going to succeed, but we'll take the learnings from it and then I imagine end up killing this prototype and then moving on more directly into something around public comment. So those are the 4 tracks we have going in terms of ICANN Labs and the end goal of where we aim to be. So that's it for a status update on that.
Thanks, Chris. Before we move to the third bullet, and we've got about 20 minutes left in the call, are there any questions for Chris on this bit? Looking for hands. Not seeing any hands. Okay, I think you've convinced everybody hook, line, and sinker, Chris. Okay, no questions for Chris at all on this? Okay. Could we then, to the extent that you can take us down the road on the third bullet, which is recommendation number 15 from HRT1, the implementation of stratified, prioritized public notice and comment periods, and if you need to hand that off to another colleague, by all means, please do.
Will do. So ICANN Labs, I'm going to continue that discussion moment for a little while, because when we were looking at public comment, one of the things we wanted to do was just improve the experience on ICANN.org for public comment. We felt that the experience is difficult for many people. The public comment is not, while we've done a great deal around being more clear what the document is and adding information around the document, so, you know, the open and close dates and so on, why this document is, or why this this document is up for public comment. So we've added quite a bit there, and I think that's some very successful work. But the process itself of a public comment had not been improved, and it's the same technology we've been using for years. And the experience is not very good, and I think everybody will acknowledge that. You know, the comment itself is hidden, so you have to click through on a link, and then you go to this list of emails, and you sort of have to navigate your way through the emails. So at the very minimum, we wanted to make this all more visible on ICANN.org so that, you know, people could just read them through very right next to the document that's there. We could read through what people were saying, what the various communities or individuals or groups or individuals were saying about the document. There's also ideas about having supporting threaded discussions, so having a response right next to a comment, so being able to support that. So, again, people could see an inline or threaded discussion around a particular comment or idea or topic associated to that document. So there are ideas around testing that as well. So, again, engender more comments and more discussion, which was the goal for us, which we had been, well, how we've interpreted some of those. What we had decided was, for staff, what we had decided was, again, to test these ideas, we said, well, we should be best if, before we change ICANN.org, given the sensitivity around this subject, it'd be best to test some ideas on ICANN Labs. We thought that'd be a good venue for us to test some of the ideas and test new tools that would help engender more comments, or at least test that idea. You know, would this new tool engender no more comments, or would it not? And if it doesn't, then, okay, maybe it's not successful. Unfortunately, the tests so far, I'll be frank, we rather than testing those very direct new technologies, we went with the roundtable first. And in hindsight, I think that was a mistake. I think the roundtable, again, was trying to add relevancy to those, to the public comment process, rather than just fixing the nuts and bolts of just making the comment more visible, which we thought would have been a good success. And so that test is, again, I think has failed, but I still want to talk to the advisory group and see what their input is on that, and we're meeting tomorrow morning. But that's my personal opinion, at least to date. So what I'd like to do is take that track and focus it directly on that problem and not fiddle around the edges anymore, but very much see, okay, what technology can we use to just make public comment more visible and more direct? So that's, I think, my update on that. Any questions around specifically that and how it relates to ICANN Labs and what we intend to do? And then if that's successful, obviously, sorry, if I may just wrap up. If those tests are successful over the next few weeks, and you'll see those appearing probably in about a week, we'll start showing things, then I would need to like to update the ATRT2 team, if appropriate, in probably about 4 to 6 weeks to show you the results. And if not, it's also going to be very visible because it's all online all the time.
Hi, Chris, this is Brian. I see a hand up. Alan, please.
Thank you. Thanks, Chris. Just a couple of pointed comments about why the comment process and looking at the comment looking at comments is so difficult right now. And I'll give you some really nitty issues. Currently, almost everyone posts a comment as an attachment, which adds an extra link to what you have to click to actually see what the thing is. On top of that, a lot of mail
programs do not use the right MIME type, and therefore for security, ICANN changes them, and therefore when you click on a link, you cannot read it. When you click on one of the attachments, because it's really a PDF, but it doesn't say PDF, it says something else.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's a stupid thing. When I originally found that 5-6 years ago, someone said, well, you know, you can have viruses in attachments, and it's, if it didn't come as a PDF MIME type, then we won't label it as PDF, even though it had a PDF file type. And, you know, so some of the annoyances are just nitty technical issues, which could be, you know, made a lot easier. And then, of course, if everyone's going to use attachments, why do we have to go through the intermediate link to see their email? You know, so
yeah.
Some of them are just mechanical things which are almost designed to make it as difficult as possible to look at someone else's comments, never mind comment on them. So when you're looking at high-level ideas, also make sure to address some of the small nitty things, which are some of the real annoyances along the way. Thank you.
Chris, if you have any comments?
Okay, sorry. Just a very quick comment. You're absolutely right, Alan. I fully acknowledge that I think we made a mistake over the past 6 weeks in working on this, in that we were thinking about hitting a home run when we should have just looked at some very simple, like you point out, mechanical things. And that was, we were reminded of this quite forcefully internally by some staff saying, look, you know, there are 5 or 6 just very basic things we can do that'll make life easy for everybody. So we have definitely pivoted and turning our attention to doing that on ICANN.org. Forget even waiting for some of the later stuff as we develop the new website. So I'll definitely have an update for you personally and ATRT soon about some of those.
Thank you, Brian.
Sure, David Olive. thank you, Brian. I just wanted to comment on some of the internal processes that we use, and as Chris pointed out, the need to upgrade, if you will, and explore new platforms and new tools that could augment the existing system. But in terms of the processes at the moment and the staff use of them, we appreciate the ACRT look at comment and reply comment and the possibility of providing a little more exploration of other strategies as the reply comment has not been used as effectively as we thought, though the longer process for comment is something that people have mentioned. It helps in getting a comment, in organizing groups to input into a comment by their various networks. So to that extent, this is, I think, very helpful. The other thing, of course, is that we have broken up the forecast reporting, and I'd just like to turn to Rob, who's helped us on that, to kind of refresh it every trimester as we look at it as a better way to focus the attention on the community of what's coming up. And so if I could turn to Rob, and then I'll finalize something on the blackout period. Rob?
Thanks, David. I appreciate it, and thanks to the ATRT2 members for letting me sit in, listen, and learn during your conversation today. Yeah, as you've probably discussed with David and Chris in the past, you know, the policy team is one of the biggest customers of the public comments tool in and of itself. And as we've gone through various organizational changes and the rest, we've been happy to start playing more of an advisory role in helping Chris and some of his teammates develop new ways to look at this. One of the places where we've sort of jumped into the breach to help out is in this upcoming public comments area. I think it was Olivier on this team who pointed out that was an area that had become quite fallow. And so David asked me to step in and help rejuvenate that effort. We've essentially taken things continued in the same direction that the original senior director of participation and engagement started, and fine-tuned it a little bit, so that we're at the point now where the goal is that on a trimester basis, that's between each of the public ICANN meetings, we're conducting internal polling of the staff, the various departments, including the liaisons to the various community groups like some of you are from, and asking them for information on three timetables. First, you know, what's coming up between now and the next ICANN meeting, then what's in that timetable between the next two, and then the third, looking out almost a year. The hope is, and I started to get some good feedback a couple of months ago, that timetable seems to be realistic in terms of how the different community groups set their agendas and their time frames. And the thing that we're looking to fine-tune now is really getting that process regularized within the staff so that it becomes more of a, oh, yes, we have that to do, and that's a part of our regular job, as opposed to, what, Rob's sending me this new email, and I have to produce what? I think over time we're going to see more and more improvements on that as, quite candidly, the newer staff becomes just regular staff and people who are regularly aware of and are assigned this duty of just providing to a central internal staff resource information about the upcoming public comments. There have been some side benefits of this effort in having it run by staff internally, and that is it drives more staff collaboration. We've had in the 5 years that I've been at ICANN occasional, you know, fits of saying, gee, are we too siloized? Are we not really aware of what's going on in other departments? And so I think what we're beginning to see is not only benefits to the community more broadly in terms of being able to plan their work and their agendas, but also from an internal staff perspective, a better understanding of what's coming down the pike for different departments. And for some, it's really been an education for them to say, oh, you know, someone else is interested in what I'm doing, and oh, you need that information how many months in advance? So that's been a positive development as well. David, if I can, just, you know, while I have the benefit of this great soapbox, one thing that I'd like to sort of throw out is something for ATRT consideration, and whether that's this group number two or a future group, is that, you know, the public comment process is just one channel, potentially, for input into policy development, small p. You know, I mentioned that while the policy team is one of the, you know, major customers of the resource, it's also a mechanism for getting comments on the budget. It's a comment channel for the ICANN strategic plan, the ICANN operating plan, the SSR activities. And so it's a channel that's used in a number of different ways. And it would be helpful to, you know, explore as we go forward sort of the evolving expectations that the community has about not just this channel but potentially others. That's where I think we're seeing some tremendous value in the expertise that Chris Gift has brought to ICANN. You know, that ability to think, are there other ways, are there other mechanisms, and Chris is constantly challenging us in this regard to do something better. And it's not just to improve the existing channel, like public comments, but it's looking at all the channels and trying to find inventive, creative, effective ways through workshops, through webinars, through tweets, for example, just to find more effective ways for people to contribute to ICANN's activities, to the policy development efforts. So, you know, I'm sure you guys are talking about that from time to time, but that sort of conversation and any advice you all can provide as a review team in that regard, I think would be very helpful. And then finally, just more specifically on the public comments channel, as David noted, you know, we're gathering data on how things improve over time. But one of the areas I think that we could get more guidance and help on is what you all as the review team see as what potentially is a successful public comment forum, for example. Is that we get 10,000 comments from individuals on a particular issue, or is it enough to have an efficient process that ensures that the various SOs, ACs, and their subgroups within ICANN contribute their representative comments? I think that continues to be an ongoing debate and conversation we have as staff, and the more input we can get from groups like yours would be very helpful. Thanks, David, for letting me chat, and I'm happy to take any questions.
This is Brian. I'm going to offer a few thoughts that I hope help and to the team as well. We've got just a few minutes left on this call. All excellent points and questions, and directionally providing tools and approaches to broaden the tent or allow for fuller participation in the comment process or the policy development processes with a lower PDP is the right way to go. I don't think there's ever been a measurement of the efficacy of comments based on the number filed. And I'm not sure that that's a useful direction to go in terms of metrics, although it's certainly interesting metrics for a number of reasons. But getting back to recommendation number 15 and the recommendation around establishing a comment and a reply comment process, we've had some discussion already on the review team recognizing that new approach hasn't worked the way it was envisioned. And I think a sense that certainly new techniques, new tools to provide open access and more participation is the right way to go. Whether it's a question of the reply comment cycle is so broken that it should be discarded or that it can be maintained as a part of a broader set of approaches is an open question. And I don't think anyone's pushing in one way, one direction or the other on that. But I think what's important to focus on is the why those recommendations were made and looking at the implementation of stratified and prioritized public comments. What's really underneath that is that anyone who wishes to participate, obviously that they have access to participate fully and effectively, but that there's clarity around the process that you're engaging in, that there's an understanding of what is this particular comment process focused on and what's the issue and what impact does it have on me as a stakeholder, that the volume of the comment process itself is an issue in terms of how effectively any stakeholder can participate over time. And so clarity around the purpose, around the issue, around prioritization, and around just overall management of that process, whether it's through a comment and reply comment mechanism or some new tools or a combination of both, is really what was behind the original recommendations. And to what I'm hearing based on feedback from the community, those remain central concerns. So if I can offer that as guiding thoughts as you move forward down this road. And this is a very helpful call. And this is exactly the kind of call that we're looking for as we move toward our draft report. This type of input from the staff, and please keep bringing more of it to us, that helps us inform our assessment of past implementation and any new recommendations. And please, with those guiding thoughts, if you have more to add with what you're developing as we get into October and November before we get to our final report, we'd be very interested to hear what directions you're going. Alan, I see your hand is up.
Yeah, and I'm sensitive to the fact that we're out of time, but just a very quick comment. One of the things that's changed in public comments over the last couple of years is we went from a few paragraphs to describe the issue and a pointer to the document to what amounts to a page or two and or certainly several screens worth of very carefully formatted information. The latter is a great source if you're looking for something particular, but is also overwhelming to someone for someone who's just scanning something. Somehow we have to get to the point where we are concise, at least in the equivalent of an executive summary of the comment field. And I'll give one very quick example outside of the public comment field. The GNSO was trying to put together a drafting team for a working group, and basically nobody came, and they've just reissued the call. The call doesn't, the title of the group is Uniformity of Reporting. It is almost impossible reading the documents to find out exactly what this working group is supposed to be doing. when I've described it to people on the phone, on teleconferences, they say, oh, well, I'll join. It's interesting. But you'll never get it from reading the documents unless you actually go and read the 100-page document that's the backup document. We've got to figure out how to write things to catch people's attention. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. And we're at time. I have to get on another call myself, but two quick items. First of all, thank you, ICANN staff. Very, very helpful. Appreciate all those inputs and take the points from us forward, and happy to hear more as you move forward in your work. Second, for all ATRT two members on the phone, in terms of templates, to the extent that you have any to put into the wiki as drafts, the objective before we get to our face-to-face next week in Washington is for each template, each issue, each assessment that's been assigned, that there is a full template. It does not have to be perfect. It does not have to be polished and shiny, but that all of the background information and analysis you have to date be in that template so that we can have fully informed discussions next week, and that is the clear objective. Please deliver those before we get to Washington as soon as you can so we can hit that objective. Lastly, Larissa, you had a specific issue for any other business before we close. Can you remind me what that was? Larissa, are you still on the call?
Yes, Brian, I am. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
The issue had to do with the composite score sheet for the independent expert. We just wanted to clarify that it was the review team's intention to post publicly the composite result.
My recollection is that it was. I know we had some discussion. I think some people raised questions about whether it needed to be out publicly. I might want to do a quick check of that transcript to be sure beforehand. My recollection was that we would follow the practice we followed last time. Is that any...
That was in keeping with our review of the transcript on the staff side as well, and it is consistent with what ATRT 1 had done. So the responses to the RFP obviously would not be shared for various reasons that this team has already discussed, but the composite that shows the final scores by each of the firms that had provided a proposal would be shared.
Yeah, that's the total score, not the score in the individual areas. One point of process might be that we give a friendly heads up to each of them before posting. I think that might have been an issue someone raised, and if that is the case, that's probably something we should do. As a matter of course, that would be appropriate.
Yeah.
So, Larissa,
Brian, it's Alan.
I
may be wrong, but I thought we decided just to label an ABC and only identify the winner and not identify the losers. Yeah.
That's what it was. Thank you. That covered off that point. Yes. So identifying the winner only and anonymity on the other two then provides some comfort, if you will.
Very good. Thank you for that.
Okay. Thanks, Alan, for that recall. Thanks all to staff. Alice, I see you typing. I do need to hop on another call with the independent expert. Just a thank you to everyone. Okay, thanks all. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.